Entrepreneurs at Work podcast series. As you know, in this podcast series, we talk to technology leaders from all around the world. And this podcast episode is very, very special because we have Mr. Philip Blumenthal from Dr. Freight. And he's a Chief Transformation Officer in the ECU worldwide as well. And across the career timeline of Philip, he has done so many amazing things, played so many interesting leadership roles across there. So with that note, I would like to welcome Mr. Philip. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And it's a real pleasure to be another guest on your podcast.
Great. So Philip, as you have great experience around the industry and worked so many years in the industry, so how was your journey looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm specifically in the logistics industry, right? And I think you need to have, for whatever industry you're in, you need to have a passion for it, right? And what comes with a passion is two things. A, to understand the intricacies of the industry, the problems. And then the second thing is like having a love for solving these problems, right? And so once you have that, I think then you have a great baseline for changing the path of this industry, which is the true work. It is not to deliver a task. It is not to complete a project. It is truly to shape an industry you're in. And that's something I'm passionate about.
Awesome. That's great. That's amazing. So you've been into logistics space only from quite a long time, or you have explored other domains as well?
I've explored for like 1.5 years in other space, but I think once you're deep in a specific industry, I think then not only you're building trust, but you're also building a network and connection, which is quite important in this industry, right? And so I've been mostly in the logistics space, international freight forwarding, so to say, international logistics, and specifically in this, on the logistics tech side. With that, there's a lot of change that comes with it. Change management or transforming organizations is, I think, something that most of your guests in your podcast are talking about, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'm also curious to know and understand how you get into logistic industry. Is it something like you had some backgrounds before, some family backgrounds or friends, or you started something over there? What was the intent to get into this industry and being sticky for such a long time?
I'm originally from Germany. In Germany or the German-speaking countries, logistics is quite an important industry, and you have specific trades. People truly have careers in the logistics industry versus in other countries that basically get into this after maybe starting at a company and getting into supply chain management or purchasing or so. In Germany, truly, it is a career, right? And so, I think that's basically what started it. The first thing is that I think you learn in every industry, you learn customer problems by selling the services within this industry. So I think a good starting point for every career or also later when you're an executive is getting into sales positions and meeting with customers, understanding the problems, understanding the challenges to not only understand your own organization, but to also form problem statements and solutions around it. So that's a little bit of history about me.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So you graduated from Europe, Germany there, and then worked, or what was your career background looks like?
Yeah. In my previous answer said, I was 2 years in on the sales side, and then I was very fortunate that I was able to had the ability to manage the CEO office of the second largest company in the industry at that time. and seeing truly like the industry from up top. The company today is about 20 billion in revenue. The company is has about 65,000 employees. It's called DB Schenker. And managing an office and seeing the different strategic projects being formed and executed, it's very, very interesting. And then had the chance to do a very important strategic project myself, rolling out an ERP and changing the process landscape in North America. That's how I came to the US. Transformation doesn't always happen gradually, right? You have your hiccups, and sometimes you have to step in yourself. So that's what I did. One of the local P&Ls, specifically the one in New York, it wasn't easy to transform. So I took the ownership over this with that P&L and started the transformation journey there, my own. So that worked relatively well, and then had the was very fortunate to have the ability to create a complete new business model at a company called Freightos. They went public about 3 months ago. A complete new business model with my colleagues, where we were able to create a marketplace for selling freight online, which never happened internationally before in that kind of marketplace, and that worked very, very well. And fast forward, I had the ability to build more business models, and now I'm here and just created at ECO Worldwide, created new business or scaled the digital business model. So that was the major transformation work in the last 2 years that I've done.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing. Amazing. I'm a follower of Freightos. Absolutely. They're really doing amazing work. Yeah. Similarly, I'm also, closely watching Project 44 and Freightify here in India, doing something around the freight forwarding industry. So that's amazing space to play around with these technology systems.
Indeed. It's interesting, yeah. But the adoption is still lagging, right? So that's something that's probably the hardest part, because you can build technology and products easily, but it's very difficult to build to change human behavior.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
You get this probably from other participants in the podcast, right?
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. So, can you provide an overview of Dr. Freight and the unique solution it offers in the freight industry or logistic industry as a whole?
Yeah, Dr. Freight actually is more a brand. I was invited to, I think, some speaking events. And since I got my PhD in logistics, someone actually, another colleague, a former colleague of mine, he created this, said he should be Dr. Freight. So I created the brand around it. And every time I'm speaking under Dr. Freight, there's not much at the moment else around this, but if anyone is interested, then and maybe there is, right? It's at the moment, it's truly like a social media brand. That's what it is. Yeah.
That's really amazing. That's fantastic. Dr. Freight, that's a very, very catchy and unique name.
indeed. But you never know, right? I mean, the good thing is, over the journey, over the last 20 years, I was able to make a lot of acquaintances and friends in this industry that all share a similar path, right? And you meet each other over time again. So it's basically like a common journey you take together. And so this is basically why a brand, Dr. Freight, is important, to basically be also recognized in along this journey.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So this is a good way, I think, to understand your thoughts on technology leadership role. We, some people call it CTO role, some CTO, CDO, or many form of variations of out there. The whole crux is like the technology leadership role. So how do you see this within the logistic industry is evolving. Let's say, you know, starting from a small startup to a matured organization and beyond. What do you see in the current trend that role is evolving?
Yeah. So it's how the role is evolving is basically the a similar role was there for a very, very long time, right? It's not new, but I think it has formed. So initially what it was very much the role, what you find often in PMOs and on project management roles, right? Working with different disciplines. And one of the initial, I think, challenges of such a role was to speak with the different business stakeholders and then speak with like in-house IT and marry the two, right? And basically bring them together. And this role has changed. So it is now a role that combines the two, understanding the business and the business needs, and at the same time being able to build solutions directly to it, right? And so I think that's something that is probably has changed. I wouldn't say it's new, but it's basically evolving, that companies are thinking differently about how to structure solution design.
That's quite insightful. Absolutely. One follow-up question on this, Philip. So I've seen many of the business leaders in any industry, right? They have this common challenge when we work with any technology leaders, like they say, oh, they are good in tech, but they don't understand business much, right? And in a way, because of that pain point, the tech leader could not be able to get exactly what problems need to be solved. How should we address that? How these technical leaders need to think, or they can follow any framework to tune their understanding? Or what are your recommendation or suggestion on for solving that problem?
Yeah. So the first thing is you need to make everyone aware of a vision. And I think everyone, like every smart person, is able to comprehend a vision depending on how it's framed. And so this is like where I like to start off of, right? And why is this? Is because when we were little kids and we grew up, we ask our questions, our parents in the local language, obviously, but we ask them why. It's a very like a human question that is like very inherent, right? And we unlearn this over time to ask why. But it still is deep in us to understanding why is this important? Why are we doing this? And so often on the development side, on the tech side, leaders are seen as purely like the execution function, without an engagement of what's coming on the business side. And so that's why explaining the vision and taking them on the journey by explaining them why this is important for them from a KPI perspective, from maybe a career post perspective, from maybe monitor perspective, right? And asking a series of whys and explaining it to them, that I think is very, very important.
Absolutely. I think that's a great example. That is amazing way to, you know, give recommendation and suggestion, you know, asking why. And I can resonate and correlate that pretty well. I have my 5-year-old kid, and every time when I ask him to do something, he always asks why, or he randomly picks up things, ask why. Why this happens? Why this that? So that's exactly. I think really, really amazing way to, you know, communicate this to the leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. And we unlose this, right? But I mean, we have these W questions, right? That are important. But I think the why is one of them, remains the most important one. And you shouldn't go beyond if employees team members or anyone else along the journey is not understanding the why, right? This is the core principle, and you need to repractice it all the time. You need to study it with them so that everyone can rehearse the vision, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with that. Absolutely. Now, as you have a lot of experience around the digital transformation area, and doing a great work across many different large companies, so and digital transformation has become a key priority for business across the industry. So in your experience, okay, Philip, what are some of the most impactful digital transformation initiative you have witnessed or have been part of? Any interesting impact or any interesting initiative you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, so in the logistics industry, each company has an ERP at its core to manage workflows, to manage data. And I think that about 20 years ago, when 20, 30 years ago, when the ERP systems early on were like starting to be implemented, and you know, like they were implemented in a way to create documents. It was a matter to create documents and maybe to record some data. But the key function then that has changed now is that ERP systems are used to A, collaborate, and to capture data to manage the business smarter. And so not all systems are set up for that because the data is siloed, because the system cannot be used globally, or simply data is not shared among different units. And that, I think, is the biggest transition that we're seeing right now. And so that systems have to change in order to collaborate and A, on a workflow perspective, but also B, on a data perspective. And I think we're just starting with the next evolution step, which is on the AI side, that now a human is working alongside a machine that then basically intelligently completes work, where a lot of systems aren't capable of doing this today. And we're just starting with this. So this is probably the next big step that we're going to see.
That's amazing. So have you seen any interesting use case using ChatGPT in this space?
I mean, there are many. I think the most important one is in this space, there are two. There's one, a lot about coordination work. And it's basically like, you know, I'm managing a shipment from A to B, where basically you have a lot of tasks that are unique to this specifically transportation shipment, but they are repetitive for all others. And that's something that can be fulfilled, creating certain documents, updating certain parties, for example, a trucker to pick up a shipment, right? This can be used there. The second thing I think even more important is that we saw in the recent past that freight rates have been very volatile. We've seen that the freight rates during the pandemic, let's say from China to the US, they scaled from a level of $2,000 per container to $25,000 container. And then came down again. Now they're like above $1,000 per container, right? 40-foot container. So, and a human often needs to make pricing decisions, but the pricing decisions are so complex. Not only to understand what my cost basis is, but also understand what the pricing availability of my customer is. And that's where AI technology will be able to assist the human brain to make much smarter pricing decision on the sales side, but also on the purchasing side of what product, what how to price this. And I think this is something where we will see a lot of technology coming in.
Got it. This is quite interesting. Yeah. And as you said, all of these processes are very structured. From point A to point Z, you have various steps involved that are repetitive in nature. So that makes it a strong candidate for RPA kind of technology or IPA, intelligent process automation?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's. I think that's definitely an interim step or always like a quick fix, right? Where you have different applications that are not speaking with each other or human with a human interface, right? And you need to overlay this with some automation, and that's where RPAs, bots, absolutely do work, right? And can be done, absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. So do you think like RPA is a band-aid solution, or is it a part of a larger strategy? Because in many of these, especially logistic organization, I see, you know, they use, some of these are stuck in the older ERP systems. Some of them, they have their own proprietary. For example, in India, people use Logisys heavily. In some part of it, they use CargoWise. And they're stuck with that. They build band-aid RPA solutions to automate some of these pieces, but then forward the larger strategy on top of it. So what do you suggest, like how these companies should consider or reevaluate their strategies? One further thought to this, I've seen, in especially in the logistic space, many of the companies are like second or third generation, right? Their father has started a long back and now their generation is continuing. Many of these providers are like that. So they are operating their businesses in their own ways and means they want to run it. We see like different sizes. So what's your suggestion and recommendation? How they can embrace this technology and what strategic initiatives they roll out in their organizations?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, always you have to start from a customer or from a revenue perspective, right? And basically like then work backwards where maybe some blockages are, right? I think that's something to start off, like how can you grow your revenue further, right? I think this is basically, this is an important factor to think about before coming to the systems perspective. And I know it sounds quite far off, but when you do this, you come to a conclusion that you don't think of like systems as one block, but you see it in a very modular fashion. And this is something that we're going to see going forward, that basically is technology development, especially on the logistics side, will come up with a very, very nice product features in the future. But not every application has the same product feature that you need. Right. And so you need to think from a solution perspective, very modularly. And that's where RPAs are great connectors. If you don't have like native integration of the AP on the EDI or API side, that basically you can build bots to have applications speaking together, or where basically like you need a human intervention that basically is assisting human intervention, for example, updating customer about certain exceptions that cannot be handled from an application perspective.
Well, this is quite interesting. Yeah. Let's say, Philip, let's assume hypothetically, let's say you are a 25-year young college, just pass out, and you have a lot of interest into entrepreneurship, starting something of your own into logistic space. So what sort of product you would be launching at this time?
Yeah, that's a great question. if I had a perfect answer, I would do it, even, although I'm older. no, I mean, look, I think the first thing is to truly understand the industry before launching something, right? You always need to have a problem, and then B, to get a tailwind of what's truly needed. And I've seen a lot of companies, startups, that just basically launch something that is just a me too. And they've done their homework, and I get approached with them for having recommendations. I said, like, look, so many have this already. Like, don't get into this, right? I think this is the first thing. Do your homework and truly understand what problems there are and why they have not been solved or so, right? And so I think one of the key functions that I just mentioned in the answer before is there are so many small products or small features that still are yet to be built, that are manual today. And that is something I think that would need to be, these features you can convert into a product company where you focus on a specific product that you can then can sell to one of the larger ERPs, right? So for example, if it is about drayage, if it's about, you know, certain pickup delivery status, about CO2 emission, about, you know, all these like different features that then add on to a bigger ERP.
Yeah, that sounds quite interesting. Yeah, I think absolutely. That's a great advice. I think that's how people should take it. They should not jump directly on building the product instead of looking at what's the underlying pain point in the market. That's mm-hmm. what industry needs. I think that's a great piece yeah. of advice, that build something small and then create a I think one thing you very interestingly highlighted, that try to do partnering with these ERPs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now within the organization, right, there are people who wears the tech head, and there are now the strangers coming around, the techno business folks, right, who have understanding of business and understanding of tech as well. So is these kind of people is good fit for starting such kind of initiatives within the organization? And here I'm talking like organization which is 100 plus employee organization, where it has some structure in place. So what do you think? This is the role, external partnership for such kind, is a tech role, or is a business team need to own this such kind of initiatives?
I think it's a combination of two, right? It's always like you never want to have a siloed project. You want to have ownership on all sides with all the parties that are involved, and that's a task you have to do at the very beginning. Is buy-in, right? Buy-in from all the different stakeholders. I think that's basically what's important. Yeah,
right, absolutely. And I think that's the same mistake I've seen in many companies, and that creates a lot of internal chaos around people are, you know, fighting with each other, those things. That's, I think, great piece mm-hmm. of advice, because when somebody, exactly. a tech person move from tech to business role, they don't understand what exactly need to be executed. Now, this leads to a good segue, Philip, in understanding, as I understood, execution is very critical in building any of these products, whether you build a small or a large, big kind project. And that combines like people, process, and technology all together. And that's the mm-hmm. shape of the product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you see in any organization which want to adopt the digital transformation initiatives,
mm-hmm.
that means the mm-hmm. organization is already running, have some processes in play. So what do you think? What should be the focus area of the leader to spend their most of the time? Is it technology? Is it on people side, or is it on the process side?
I think there's not one, but I mean, it's obviously much easier to control processes and technology than to control people. So I always say to my teams is you need to work your leverage, right? And what does it mean? Leverage is something that only I can do, right? That is my task of like, what is it that only I can do? And look, if you're, let's say, a product manager, right? Then basically only I can do is documenting a business need and creating requirements out of it and explaining it to developer. That is something that only I can do. I can do many other things as well, but this is only what I can do. From a management perspective, I can resolve bottlenecks, right? Especially on the staffing side and the budget side, right? This is something only I can do. So if you ask basically what area should be important, then look at basically what is it where your leverage is most needed.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, I'm moving now to the organization culture piece, as organization culture is very important, and especially how you structure your organization to create those amazing products, also very important, because that drives the culture. So what's your current organization structure or culture looks like? And second thing is, what's your recommendation for building right org structure for building any new product in the market?
Yeah. So from our side, our organization is very entrepreneurial. Down from the sponsor or the ownership, it is very focused on creating value and growing customer base, right? So this is, I think this is very, very important there. There are other organizations, right? So it doesn't have to be like this, but our organization is built like this. And with that, for me, what I always think is important is that our the product team sits at the core focus, because the product team is able to understand, capture the customer needs without becoming their like a spokesperson, the customer spokesperson, right? And able to coordinate the different requirements across the various teams. So that's, I think, what's important.
Fantastic. So now I'm moving to one of the interesting thing. It's a very interesting topic of this, where our listener are ways to listen to that topic. What is your war story? Like, what is something, the biggest challenge you have solved or overcome that you think that, yes, this is something I did it?
Yeah, I think it's when you have an organization that for the last 10 years, 15 years had worked in one specific process, has worked in one specific ERP, and you not only have a few people, but you have several thousand of these people, right? And the processes aren't harmonized. And we were able to explain to them that basically coming to a new process and organizational landscape is a benefit, and we were able to take everyone on this journey through. And we did this again, starting with a why, with a vision that was number one. And number two is good training, because people follow or do what they feel comfortable with. And if they're trained properly in a certain way that they've learned over time, then they basically are very comfortable in processing it. So I think this was very, very good. That was basically changing the ERP and the process landscape at a company called DB Schenker.
Okay, that's interesting. So now, what is the final piece of advice you would like to give, Philip, to all the audience who are tech-centric, their technology leaders around? What advice you want to give them?
Yeah. So the first advice is you can't over communicate, right? And so I think whatever your vision is or whatever your need is, you just need to communicate it to your stakeholders. That's number one, to take them on the journey. And the second advice I think I would give is don't try to do basically the 10-year work at once. Break everything down in modules and break it down in a small snackable fashion, right? Because it becomes far more digestible and manageable, and also you incur far less risk.
Right, that's great. And that was the last question, Philip. I know you have a hard stop now coming up, so thank you so much, Philip, for your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'll reach out to you if our audience have any specific question to you. We will publish this podcast on Spotify, on Amazon Music, YouTube, on LinkedIn, everywhere. And we'll come back to you for any further questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.